This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 269, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And please look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, which is an extra 20 minutes, please join the Patreon campaign. This week I'm talking to Dr. R. Craig Hogan about his book, Evidence Beyond a Reasonable Doubt You Will Never Die. Craig is one of the world's leading experts on the greater reality, death, and the afterlife. He's the author, co-author, or editor of 8 books containing information about the life after this life and afterlife communication. Craig is the co-founder and president of the non-profit Afterlife Research and Education Institute. Hi, Craig. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Simon, I'm pleased to be here. I'm anxious to talk to you about the afterlife and life after death and all of the other subjects that are so fascinating today.
And we're going to talk about your book, which is called Evidence Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, You Will Never Die. But first of all, can you tell us about SeekReality.com?
We developed SeekReality.com because we wanted to bring all of the information that we have today about the life after this life, afterlife communication, and the nature of reality to people. Most people are ignorant. They just don't know the truth about these subjects. And so we wanted to develop a website that would bring all of them. We have a series of articles. It's rather like a YouTube page, in which we have articles and we have videos and having to do with all kinds of topics related to the afterlife, afterlife communication, and the nature of reality. And so Seek Reality now is available to everybody. We are anxious for people to get on, and there's additional information online that people can get if they subscribe, but there's a lot of free information there.
So the book is just fascinating. And one of the things I found, it's such an easy read. And also, I was reading it to get my questions together, and I was thinking, oh, I've got to ask him about that. And then I've got to ask him about that. And it's so interesting, and there's so much that I wanted to talk to you about. I haven't got enough time in the episode. But one of the things I really liked that you did was you put the links in there to afterlifeinstitute.org, where we could listen to the recordings that you're talking about in the book.
Yeah, we actually have the recordings online, and if they get the version that is on a Kindle or other website device, they can actually link to them from there. But all they have to do is put the links into their browser, and they can go to them and listen to the recordings. We have recordings of people who are speaking from the life after this life, and most people don't realize that, but there really is no veil between this life and the next life. There is only whether we can communicate with the people that are there. They can communicate with us. They can do it through recordings. They can do it through mediums. They can do it through hypnosis. And they can do it through EMDR, eye movement desensitization, and reprocessing, a psychological method. So there are many ways in which they can communicate. And so we've got the recordings. All people have to do is listen to them. And so that's why we put the links in the book.
Some of the recordings that I listen to, there is such clarity in the voice.
Yes.
You know, is it Leslie Flint that was bringing the voices through? So how does that work?
Well, there's actually an ectoplasmic voice box that forms on the medium's shoulder. Flint was prominent in the 20th century, and he did thousands of these recordings. He would sit in a room, and the room was darkened, and an ectoplasmic voice box would form on his shoulder and speak through it. And by a voice box, I mean it had everything required to make a voice. It had the sinuses, and it had the tongue, and the teeth, and even the breath going in and out. All of these things that were necessary to make recordings that were just like somebody standing in front of a microphone. So we have thousands of these now, and it seems to people like they're phenomenal. It's only because people have not been in any way acquainted with this sort of activity. We know that these things can happen. We are also able to capture voices on recordings in the same way, and the voices on the recordings are valid as well, but people just don't realize that we can do that. So today we have thousands of these recordings, and they have descriptions of what life is like in the afterlife and what happens during the transition when people go from this life to the next. And they're fascinating recordings. It's a wonderful library, and we're trying to bring this to people because there's so many insights in it.
And the voice is so clear, like I said. And he was tested, wasn't he? The investigators, they put a throat microphone on him so they could tell if it was him that was like faking the voices.
Thousands of tests. He said that he was the most tested medium in history. Yes, they would put a throat microphone on so that if there was any utterance, it would come through the vocal cords and it would be picked up immediately. They would have him strapped to a chair, both his torso and his legs. His arms were strapped to the chair. He was then required, as in some of the tests, to take a colored liquid and put it into his mouth and then spit it out afterwards to show that the colored liquid was the same liquid. They had elastoplast bandages over his mouth. So everything that they could do, it was so bad that people were trying to figure out why, how this could happen, how somebody could be speaking so clearly in a room when the person was in the afterlife. And one person even suggested that the voices must be coming out of his navel. And she was serious when she thought that. And the reason is because if you're a materialist, it's difficult to accept anything like this that is so obvious, and there's so much evidence for it. But he was tested thousands of times. And there was no evidence of fraud. There were times when he would just spontaneously hold a session in a motel room, just anywhere where he was. So it had nothing to do with the rooms that he was in. So he would sit with the people in the dark. The voices that came through were coming through to people who knew them, people who, their loved ones on this side of life. And they came through and they would speak for 45 minutes or an hour, just talking about their daily lives and what was going on. The voice was the same, the vocabulary, the memories. And even more than that, they would tell the person, the loved one sitting in the room with Flint, about things that were happening in his or her daily life immediately there before the session. And Flint could have none of that. He could not have known anything like that. And so it demonstrates the fact that these people were very much alive. They're with the people living on this side of life, and they're openly willing and able to communicate.
And one of the things in the book is Dr. Nanji and communicating with his wife. Mm-hmm. And didn't she say that you've got things in your pocket that you brought along? And Leslie Flint couldn't have known that.
No, he couldn't have known that. And there are other evidences of that. For instance, Annie, this is talking about Annie Nanji and Dr. Dinshaw Nanji. And the Nanjis were a loving couple. And then Annie in 1966 passed away from cancer. And so 2 years later, Dr. Dinshaw Nanji went to Leslie Flint, this medium who's able to do this, and sat with him in his office. And Annie came through and she talked with him. She was telling him things about what was going on in his life. She said that she had flown in the plane to him to a luncheon that he had in which there were speakers. And she described what the place was like where they went. She said she was sitting only a few feet from him. Of course, she was unseen. And she asked about the tape recorders. There were many tape recorders in the room. She asked, why were there so many tape recorders? And he said, yes, that's true. It's because in case one breaks down, they've got another tape recorder. And she talked about going with him to the cemetery. And she said she watched him go to the cemetery, and he took flowers, and he put flowers on her grave. And she said, I'm not there. I'm with you. And she said, the only time I'm ever in the cemetery is when you go there. So we have all these recordings of these people who were loved ones on this side of life communicating with their loved ones in spirit. And they are telling them things that are happening in their daily lives at that time, which means they're very much alive.
Hi, Simon here, butting in. Craig sent us a recording of Dr. Nanji talking to his wife. It's not a fantastic recording, but I'm going to play it for you now. It's 11 seconds. You'll hear two voices, as Craig described, and one of them is Dr. Nanji, who is alive, and the other voice is his deceased wife, who is using an ectoplasmic voice box. So here's the recording. Make of it what you will.
You have got my ring in your pocket.
Yes.
And also the lock of hair.
Yes, everything one thing is with me.
All the various things
yes,
associated with us both.
Yes.
And so there's an ectoplasmic voice box. Do the spirits ever describe how they use the voice box? Do they say it's really difficult to do it or it's easy to do it?
They said that it's difficult to do. That it takes them a while to get used to it. And it comes through, they say that it's like they're speaking into the box. So they must on their side see it as being a box. And it's difficult. At first, many of them can only whisper. They can't get the vocal cords to work on the ectoplasmic device. And so it takes them a while to get used to it. And when they come through the second or third times, then they become masters at it. And they're able to speak just as though they were standing in front of a microphone. But it is something that they have to learn how to do. And they do it by working with it. And there are hundreds of others. There are hundreds of helpers and technicians and scientists who are working on the other side to make these things happen. So when somebody comes through, they're not standing there alone coming through. They're there with backups of hundreds of people who are helping them to do it. And so then they're able to make that voice box vibrate so that then the vocal mechanism can make the perturbations on the air. And that then comes into the eardrums of the people who are sitting there. And it's just like a normal conversation with a normal voice.
And you talk about materialization mediumship as well. And this is where people would see an actual spirit in the room?
Yeah, and it's much more than that. In materialization mediumship, and the most famous of the materialization mediums who was famous because she had a trial in which there were 22 witnesses that came forth and said, in fact, that they did meet with their loved ones when they were with this materialization medium. Now, a materialization medium is a person who can sit in a cabinet usually, and then the people from the life after this life will come through. And they will assume the form that they had when they were on Earth. They come out of the cabinet. They talk to their loved ones. Their loved ones can hold them. They can kiss them. They are very much the person that they knew, everything about them, their physical characteristics, their voice characteristics, everything is exactly the same. So we have these 22 testimonies by people that they met and talked with their loved ones who had come through. And there are many other materialization mediums who are alive today. They are having sessions and the same thing is happening. The voices are coming through, the people are materializing, and you're able to speak to them and see them and talk with them. And so it's a wonderful experience. And it's because of the fact that anything that's possible, anything that can be done, will be done when we have the opportunity to do it on this side. So we can have all kinds of communication, including materializations, if we just have the capabilities and just learn how to do it.
And with the materialization, is it the spirits are kind of molding ectoplasm to their form, or is it something else?
That's exactly what it is. So every one of us, when we are outside of the body, while we're still in the physical plane, when we're traveling, astral traveling, we have an etheric body. An etheric body is the double of the body that we have, even down to the clothes that we have on. And that etheric body then stays with us during our lifetime. When the body dies and we transition to the next life, there's no need for the etheric body anymore because we have a new body when we go into the life after this life. And it's a body that's very healthy. It's in our 20s or 30s, the way it was on Earth. And so then when the person comes back to the Earth plane, though, when they want to communicate and they come back into the Earth plane, then they assume the etheric body. It comes back. And so then when they come into the cabinet with this materialization medium, the ectoplasm from the medium's body then coats the etheric body so that it gives it substance. In one instance in which Napoleon actually was in a seance and his father came through and his father had a little finger missing and Napoleon held the hand of this materialized person. And in fact, that hand had the little finger missing exactly the same way as it was when he was alive on the Earth plane. Of course, that person then in the next life had all of his fingers, was perfectly healthy. But the materialization mediums then are able to have the person coat their etheric body with ectoplasm and assume exactly the same proportion. I have had a discarnate person, a person from the life after this life, put his hands over my head and stretch his hands from with the palm and my forehead all the way back, and he had huge hands. And then I had another person in the same seance come up to me, and he had smaller hands, and put his hand on my head to show that they were different hands. And so we know that they are solid, they have bone, just feel like they have bones, they feel like they have flesh, and it's because the ectoplasm has coated the etheric body.
So how would one of us find one of these mediums that's doing these seances? I'd love to go and sit with one of them.
There are some that are doing them now. There's a place in England called the Banyan Retreat, and that's probably the most active place now that's doing physical mediumship. And so there are physical mediums scattered all around the world. There are not many of them. It's not a huge number, and maybe a couple of dozen of them in the world today. And it isn't that there are not more of them. There are more of them, they're just not cultivated. In other words, there are many physical mediums in the population today, and they just don't know it. They haven't developed that ability, but they've got the ability. But there are people today who are doing physical mediumship. And so anybody can sit with them. And of course, since there's a small number of physical mediums, then not a great number of people can sit with them, but they are available. There are physical mediums who come to Lilydale, New York, who come to Camp Chesterfield in Indiana, to other places and have these meetings. When we had a conference, we had four conferences in Arizona, and we had sessions in which a physical medium came in, and he did his work there for the group. We had 30 people at a time, and he did a number of sessions there. So there are physical mediums doing this work today. And they have all the same experiences of the materialized bodies, of the voices that come from the person in the life after this life. And it is possible to have a materialization medium do it for someone today.
Was it a thing that there was all this mediumship happening? Like, was it the 1880s, 1890s, and through those few decades there? And then it kind of died out in the 1920s, and it's only coming back again? Or was it just continuing the whole time?
It's coming back again, but it's coming back in a different form. And the reason for that is those on the other side who are doing this work, there are thousands of technicians, of people who are scholarly people from this life who went over to into the next life, and they're continuing their work there. And they're trying to find new ways of helping people to have afterlife communications. Those communications started in 1848 with the Bang sisters in New York, and that was the first formal communications. It spread to England, and after England, then it spread back to the United States. And so then after that, in the early part of the 20th century, people just got too busy. There's too much going on. There are too many distractions. And so people didn't sit as they did before. They didn't sit as they did in the 19th century to have these things happen. And so today we have very few circles, few people sitting and making it happen. If there were more circles, as it was in the 19th century, then there would be many more of these phenomena. But what they're doing now, the people on the other side, the technicians who are working with us to make these things happen, they're developing new ways of getting through. They're using ectoplasm that is more of a widespread ectoplasm. It doesn't have to come out of the medium's body. It can come out of the air. And so then this ectoplasm now is taking the place of the ectoplasm from the medium's body and doing the same sorts of things. But they're finding ways of doing it so that they don't have to have necessarily a physical medium who's involved. But there always is a medium. So there is somebody who has the ability to help those on the other side to use their spirit energy to make things happen on this side of life.
Can we talk about, is it Dr. Ganymede D'Souza, whose daughter materialized in the room, and she was photographed? You got the picture in the book.
Yeah, we actually have the picture of her, and this happened in Brazil, and there was a man who was a medium, and he was able to have people appear in broad daylight so that somebody could just appear. And then those who were sitting in the room would recognize them immediately. So in this case, a young girl was in the room with the medium, and after a while they heard her speaking, and she then completely materialized. She sat on the laps of the people there. She was examined by a physician to make sure that she was healthy, and she had all the characteristics that she had as a little girl. Her father was there, and her father then vouched for the fact that it was his daughter who had come through. And so this happened, and it happened more than once with this medium. His name was Mirabelli. And there were people who were able to come through in broad daylight, stop, and other people knew them and talked with them and spent time with them. And then they would evaporate. They would just go into the ether. So this was a phenomenal case. There were others who were able to make this sort of thing happen. Mirabelli is probably the most prominent of these mediums who had things happen in broad daylight like that.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. We can talk about using technology as well, can't we? And I wanted to ask you about Konstantin Rodev. Is that how you say his name?
Rodeva. Konstantin Rodeva. Rodeva was a technician. He learned how to communicate with people in spirit by recording their voices. And so what he did was, and is those who came after him have done, is to start up a recorder. And then you would ask the person to a question, and then they would put their voice on the recorder. You could hear it after you played it back. The most prominent way of doing that now is being done by Sonia Rinaldi in Brazil. And it's been taken up by people such as Sherry Pearl in New York in the United States. And what they do is they play a broken up voice. It's just syllables that are nonsense syllables that have been scrambled so that they have the quality of a voice, but they have no words in them. And they play this background noise that is syllables that are meaningless. And as they play that, then they record it. And as they're making the recording, they ask questions. They say, is anybody available to communicate? And then they don't hear anything. They don't hear anything at that point in the air. And what they do is when they play it back, when they play that recording back, they hear their words. Is there anybody available to communicate? And then immediately after that, they'll hear the words of the person in spirit. We are available. And I've been able to make these recordings myself. And so I've made this happen. And anybody can. Sherry Pearl in New York actually teaches people how to do this. So anybody can learn how to do this, can make these voice recordings. The people on the other side are very anxious to do this. They are dedicated to helping us understand that there is no death and there are no dead, that the end of this life is just an end of the life of the body, that we continue afterwards. And so they're dedicated to helping us understand this. They're using their technology. They're involved in it. They're engaged in it. And they are helping us then to make these recordings to demonstrate to us, to people, that people are alive on the other side. And so Sherry now is doing this for parents. She is getting the recordings of their children. And then she gives the recordings to the parents. And the parents immediately say, yes, that is absolutely my child. Everything in the voice quality and what they're saying is my child. And it's a wonderful gift to them to be able to do this. Anybody can do it. Sherry's teaching people how to do it now.
And Konstantin came after he died, didn't he? He came, spoke to Sonia Rinaldi.
He came through to five people after he had passed away, and he spoke on the telephone. It's just like ring, ring, ring. You pick up the telephone, and he started off by saying, "This is Konstantin Radeva," in his German voice, what she would, Sonia called the Mr. German voice. And he was actually Latvian. And he would speak then, and he spoke on the telephone to these five people after he had passed away. And he's saying things about the work that they're doing in instrumental transcommunication and what was going on in his life. And they had these conversations, and they are verified conversations. Sonia Rinaldi is one of the persons who received one of these telephone calls, because Radeva is dedicated to helping Sonia on this side to make these recordings, to help people to understand that we live on after the body dies. And Radeva actually appeared to Sonia in one of these physical mediumship seances. So he materialized. I was sitting in the seance. He materialized in the seance, stood in front of Sonia, and told her that he was anxious to work with her. He's been working with her on the other side, and she didn't know it. And he has been calling her Mr. German because she had his voice, but she didn't know who it was. And she said it was him. It was he who had been coming through. And as a result of that, then she continued her work, and she knows now that Radeva is on the other side helping her.
And I listened to the recordings as well. I think there's a couple links there, isn't there? And his voice is very clear.
Yeah, it's very clear. And he's able to do it. And he's able to do it not simply because he has that ability himself, but because he has these hundreds of people, these technicians, these scientists, audio specialists who are working with them on the other side to make this happen. There are great numbers of people. There are teams. We have teams that are working with us. And we know the teams are there, and we've met the people. They have come through to us, and they're very engaged. They want to bring this truth to humankind, and they see us as helping that to happen. And so they're cooperating in any way they can. So when Radeva came through, he was demonstrating the fact that he is very much alive, he's available to communicate, and that we will live on after the body dies.
And he'd made a suggestion for Sonia Rinaldi, didn't he? Sort of telling her how she could improve what she's doing.
Yeah, he would actually made a suggestion, and I recognized it when I heard it. She was saying that it requires two transmitters. And the reason for that is that there's a requirement to have the magnetism set up with, we use germanium. It's a substance called germanium, and we put that in with these two transmitters, and then the transmitters then are able to pick up voices. And so he was explaining it to her and telling her that if she sets it up like this, that it will help her. And so she did, and she found success in it. It did work. And many of the things that people are doing now, there was another group of people who developed a device called the Spiricom. And it was a technological device. It was much like a radio receiver. But the person who did it, George Meek, developed it so that he could get the voices of people coming through from the other side. And he had extensive conversations through the medium, Bill O'Neill, who would get on and have conversations with the people on the other side who were working with them. And we have the recordings. We have the recordings of these as well, of the people from the other side speaking to Bill O'Neill and helping him in being able to calibrate to make the devices work. So all of this is available, but people just don't realize how much we have available that demonstrates the reality that there is no death and there are no dead.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. If there's so much information out there, but it's not in the media at all. It's not on TV or anywhere. And you'd think it'd be such a huge news story that it would be everywhere.
Yeah, and the reason is that people, as of yet, are spiritually backward. We are in a spiritually backward age, just starting to come out of it. And the reason for that is that the church hijacked spirituality in the West. And so it kept spirituality away from the people. People then couldn't experience it themselves. They did have experiences, but they couldn't talk about them. They wouldn't talk among themselves about what they had experienced. So the church took over spirituality. Then in the 17th century through the 20th century, science took over. And science took over and said, this stuff is nonsense. There is no such thing. There are no psychics. There are no mediums. There's no life after this life. And so when they hijacked spirituality, then the same thing happened. People were kept from it. People learned that they must not talk about this because it's woo-woo nonsense. And so then they kept it from coming out. But today there is so much of it, and there's so much communication, the internet, for instance, and videos. And there's so much communication now that it is cropping up. It's coming up from the grassroots, from people who are having these experiences. And now the truth is coming out. And we're just in the age in which it is about to hit, the wave is about to hit. And when people realize all of these truths, then it will make a tremendous difference for humankind. Humankind will learn to live together in love, peace, and joy. And we're looking forward to that time now that they have been able to show us ways of communicating with them and the reality of the life after this life.
Sonia Rinaldi produced an image of your mother that's in the book.
Yeah, I actually had flown Sonia up for a conference that I was holding, and she was preparing for the conference, and she's in Brazil and she speaks Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese. And so she wanted to have some recordings in English, though, for this English audience she was going to be speaking to at my conference. And so she set about trying to get recordings of English speakers, and she couldn't do it. Everybody wanted to speak in Portuguese. And we found out later it's because there is a Portuguese station in the life after this life, and they are the ones who communicate to us. And she was communicating through the Portuguese station. So she finally got some recordings in English, and one of them was a recording in which she actually addressed my mother, and she addressed her as Mary Rose, and that's her name, and she said, does Mary Rose have anything that she would like to say to Craig? And she did this using that recording that I had described before. So she would have gibberish in the background, and she would ask the question while she was recording the gibberish, and then after she played it back, then when she asked my mother if she had anything to say to me, she said, ready at this point. In other words, then they were ready on the other side to really make a difference, to let people know about the life after this life. And it was very much her. It was very much her voice. It was a strong voice. She had a strong voice. And so it was a delight. And not only did she do that, but she also at the same time was making trans images. Trans images are images that appear on any lighted surface. So if you have a fabric and that is lighted and you move it back and forth, it disturbs the light rays, the light signals. And as a result of that, then they use that light on the other side and they make pictures on it. They make images come on it. And so she actually did that, and she captured then the image that she got, and it was an image of my mother in her 20s. It was just identical to her, and I have a picture that I put side by side to show. And the reason it was in the 20s is because they, on the life after this life, have bodies, very solid bodies, just like bodies we have here. But the bodies are when they were in their prime on Earth. So it would be when they were in their 20s and 30s. Without any blemish, without any disease, without any issues. And so my mother appeared as she did in her 20s, because that's the way she actually is in the life after this life.
And it looks like a photograph, like we might take with a camera and going onto film and then being developed.
Yeah.
It's almost like it was a photograph that was taken of her, but you don't have any that are identical to the picture that was produced, do you?
I have it side by side in the book. So you can see the photograph, and right next to it, you can see the image that she had gotten. And they both look like photographs because it was so clear. And that's probably what you're looking at when you look at the two of them. We have many others of these where people who have had loved ones come through, and she's able to get the trans images from them and show them the images as well as get them the recordings of the person from the life after this life speaking. So we have great numbers now, great wide variety of methods of communication that we're using, and they're very successful. We just have to help people to realize that they are. I actually have a method of communication that I developed. It's using hypnosis, self-hypnosis. And what I do is I train people in self-hypnosis, and I take them through a narrated, an audio narration in which I take them into a state of hypnosis. And there they have their own afterlife communications, just sitting in their living room someplace. And these have been very successful. 86% of the people who go through the training have afterlife communications using self-hypnosis.
That's remarkable. It's something that I hear from mediums when I interview them. They say that they're not especially gifted. It's that anybody could do it if you get into the right mind space and you take the time to practice.
Yeah, that's what it is. And in fact, we know that anyone can get in touch with their loved ones. That they may not be able to, likely won't be able to have a reading for someone else, do a medium reading. But anyone is able to communicate with their loved one. Everyone is able to. We have another method, one method that's used by psychotherapists called repair and reattachment psychotherapy. And it is 98% successful in helping people while they're sitting in the psychotherapist's office to have an afterlife communication with their loved one that changes their lives. It changes their grief when they come in. They have grief that they rate as being 10 or even 10 plus 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 on a 10-point scale. It's terrible grief when they come in. By the time they leave that session and they've had a communication with their loved one, it's so realistic and it teaches them so much, and it shows them their loved one is alive, that their grief reduces to a 0 to 3 in a single session.
And they have, is it EMDR? Is that part of the process? It's weird how it works.
Yeah, EMDR is a marvelous tool. It's the breakthrough method that most people don't know about. There are 30,000 or so trained EMDR psychotherapists in the world, probably more now. That was an old statistic, but it is something which is up and coming. The Veterans Administration agrees. The American Psychological Association agrees. This is a revolutionary method of doing psychotherapy, and it really is used for PTSD primarily and for any traumas that people are having. What it does, it forces the person to readjust their mind. They have an experience in which the barriers break down between the mind's left and right side. And as that breaks down, then things come out that they had not expected to come. And it lowers their resistance. And people in the life after this life are then able to come through. They're able to make the process. And during these periods when the patient is just sitting there quietly in the psychotherapist's office, the psychotherapist doesn't know what's going on until they come out of this experience. They then will speak with their loved one. They'll go on walks with them. They may even go swimming with them in the ocean and all sorts of other experiences that they have with their loved one in the next life.
So if we can move on to something else, because I've got so much I want to ask you about. I was interested in this thing that happened with Dr. Kubler-Ross when she saw a lady called Mrs. Schwartz.
Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was voted one of the 100 most influential people of the 20th century. She is beyond reproach. Anything that she say, you can rely upon the fact that it's real, it's not a hallucination. She described in one of her books, walking down the hall of the University of Chicago when she was teaching at the medical school there. And she was walking in the hallway, and a woman walked up next to her and started walking with her and said, "Dr. Kubler-Ross, can I speak with you for a few minutes?" And Kubler-Ross wrote that she walked down the hallway with this woman next to her, and she said it was the longest walk she had ever taken in her life, because this woman next to her was Mrs. Schwartz, who had passed away, one of her patients who had passed away 2 years earlier. And so she went with Kubler-Ross and came to Kubler-Ross's office, and they opened the door, and she went in, and the two of them sat down. In the process of walking down the hallway, she said that Kubler-Ross said she actually touched the woman, and she was very solid. She was just like a normal person. So they sat down together in Kubler-Ross's office, and the woman said, Dr. Kubler-Ross, you must not give up on your work on death and dying. It's too important. We will work with you. We will let you know when the time is right. And so then she had this conversation. She even got her to write a note, Mrs. Schwartz, to write a note to another person who had been taking care of her when she was a patient. And she had the signed note from Mrs. Schwartz. So then at the end of the conversation, Mrs. Schwartz got up and Kubler-Ross got up, and Mrs. Schwartz walked through the door. She opened the door, she walked through it and closed the door. Kubler-Ross ran over to the door and looked out, and she didn't see a person up or down that whole long hallway. So Mrs. Schwartz had appeared to her, and we know Kubler-Ross was an astute person. She was an intellectual person too. She had no difficulties. She had no hallucinations. She wouldn't have had an experience like that if it had not been real, and she certainly wouldn't have reported it. So it is a real experience in a person from the life after this life materialized, walked with her because she had a message for her. And so we know this is a proof, and we have other instances of people appearing to people on this side of life after their bodies had died. These are proof that we continue to live after the body dies. There is no death.
And have you seen the note? It ever been shown to anyone?
No, I don't know. Kubler-Ross wrote about that in her book, and I'm sure she had it. I don't know whether it was on display someplace or whether we could get a look at it now. But she did have the note, and she shared it with her colleagues.
We can go back in time a little bit and talk about Helen Duncan and how eventually she was tried. I think they wanted to stop her doing what she was doing, but the only way they could do it was to try her under the Witchcraft Act of 1735.
Yes, it's an amazing story. Helen Duncan was a materialization medium in the latter part of the 20th century. She was a very talented medium, and I guess it would have been the middle of the 20th century. She was a very talented medium, and she would be able to sit in a cabinet, and she would go into trance. And then in red light, so that red light doesn't require the same amount of energy as white light, so people can appear in red light. So in red light, the people very clearly came out of the cabinet, they talked to their loved ones, they kissed them, they hugged them, they talked about things that were going on in their lives. And so there's no doubt about the fact that these things were happening with Helen Duncan. So Helen Duncan then did one seance in which she had a sailor come through and materialize. And the sailor said that he was on the HMS, Her Majesty's ship, Barham. And the Barham had sunk. And he said that he described how it had sunk and what happened when it sank. And so the British Admiralty got word of this. And they were aghast because they didn't even know about it at the time that she knew about it. And then afterwards, they wanted to keep it secret. So she knew about it, and they were very much afraid that she was going to start to share secrets. And when D-Day was about to come about, when they were going to invade Germany, they were concerned about the fact that she was letting out all these secrets about what was going on. And so to silence her, they tried her as a witch using the Witchcraft Act of 1735. And it was something that had never been used before. They just used it in order to keep her silent, to keep her in prison until after the war was over. But during the trial, and this is where the 22 people came in. 22 people came in. All of them testified that they had conversations with their loved one. They saw their loved one. They kissed them. They held them. So there was no doubt about the fact that Helen Duncan was having materializations of people. The British Admiralty knew it, that it was true, and that was threatening to them. And these 22 people had the same experience. This is one of the most evidential ways that we can realize the fact that the people live in the life after this life, and they're available to come back and speak with us.
And wasn't there also a thing where there was it an airship crash, and one of the pilots, a lieutenant, appeared and talked about the crash?
That was a medium named Estelle Roberts, and when she was doing a seance, this pilot came through from this R101 and was describing what happened when it went down and they were all killed. And the discussion then was so technical about what went down and what was happening with the airfoils and with the fuel. And it was so technical that they couldn't understand what it was. And so they brought in a specialist from who actually knew about that airship and what was going on with it. And he actually did an interview with this person in spirit, who then described what happened and how the ship went down and how they were all killed. And all of it was perfectly technologically correct. And so it's another demonstration of the fact that this is a person living the life after this life, who's just coming through and speaking to people who are living now and telling them things that they wouldn't have known otherwise.
What is this thing with the cabinet? You've mentioned it a couple of times, because it sounds like a magician's thing, doesn't it, to have a cabinet like that?
Yeah, there's a cabinet. The reason is for the cabinet is that it concentrates the energy, the medium's energy. So they sit in a cabinet and there's a curtain that goes over the cabinet. And so this concentrates their energy, and it also keeps them in the dark, because they have ectoplasm come out of their bodies. The ectoplasm is very sensitive to white light. It can't be shown in white light under most circumstances. And as a result of that, then they had to be in the dark, and they could have a red light on outside and people could come out of the cabinet, or they had to be in complete darkness. So both of those methods are being used by materialization mediums. But the cabinet is just a place where the energy can be built up and where it's completely dark. And it's these things that are happening, though, the evidence comes from the loved ones who were sitting there, who actually speak to their loved ones, who talk to them about what's going on in their lives, who understand everything, and they have the same memories, and they talk about the pet names. And all of these things happen when the materialization medium is sitting in the cabinet and someone comes out from the cabinet and talks to a loved one. So we know that even though it's done in the dark, these are the people living in the life out of this life who knew the person on this side of life and spoke with them. So there's no doubt about the fact that it is true. There is no fraud involved in it.
And when we talk about somebody coming out of the cabinet and speaking, what happens with the medium, I've heard, is that, like you said before, they'll be tied to a chair. So it can't be them that's getting up and coming out.
No, we know that that's true. And we also have infrared video of the rooms when these people are coming out, and in the case of Helen Duncan, in a red light, so everybody could see what was going on. And there was no doubt about the fact that it was not the person, the medium who was sitting in the cabinet, who was coming out. It was the individual. And so the way in which that happens is the ectoplasm that comes out of the medium's body is very manipulable and malleable. And so then that ectoplasm then can move anywhere in the room. It can become very rigid. In other words, it can form a rod, and the ectoplasm can then take things like a trumpet or drumsticks or a bell, and can make them make sounds, and can take a trumpet and move the trumpet all around the room. I was in a seance in which the medium was sitting in the cabinet. He was strapped into the cabinet as usual. There was tape across his mouth as usual. And so then there was a table, a small table that had luminescent tape on it so that we could see where the table was. Small table that was lifted up out of the air and flew around the room and didn't hit anything, just kept flying, didn't hit any individuals, came right up to them. It came right up to the front of me, and I could see the top of the table towards me, and it was spinning wildly. And these are things that just could not happen. You couldn't have somebody who was walking around the room doing these things, you know. And the medium was strapped inside the cabinet. So then the ectoplasm can be formed into rods that are very rigid. It can be formed over the etheric body and be very pliable, just like skin. It's a magnificent, it's a marvelous medium for people to make things happen from the other side on this side of life. And we're just beginning to understand fully what it is that happens. And it's very exciting.
And when you're in these seances and you've seen all these things, have you ever felt that it's a bit scary or a bit creepy, or is it just exciting to see it?
It's not scary for me because I'm used to it, but many people who are in the first seance for the first time are freaked out. I mean, you can hear screams in the room when somebody's touched, because the people in the life out of this life enjoy going around and touching people on their knees or taking something from one person's lap and putting it in another person's lap. And some people then are, you can hear the screams of delight as well as screams of being startled, because it is a very unusual experience. But everybody who goes in expects that there will be something like that happen. For me, I'm very accustomed to it. There's nothing that I see that is unusual. We have our own circle here, and we have a medium, a physical medium, who's developing. But in our circle, we sit around a table. It's a dining room table. It's a reasonably solid, good sized table. And we sit around this table in the dark. And as we sit and sing songs and raise up our vibrations, then we feel the table start to vibrate. And so it will vibrate in increasingly strong vibrations until it can get to the point where it can lift up the whole one side of the table and walk the table across the room. And we're standing there, we're trying to hold our hands on the table, hold our fingertips lightly on the top of the table, and we're trying to travel with the table as it goes across the room. So all of these things happen, and they're verified. I have seen them happen. I've enjoyed the experience of having them happen, and they are life-changing when they happen. Anybody can have them. They just have to have a materialization medium.
And does it take a long time for this kind of mediumship to develop? Because I've heard there might have to be a circle sitting every week for months or years before stuff really starts to come through.
We sat for 7 years before anything happened. And then things slowly developed through the next 5 or 6 years. But we sat with nothing happening for 7 years. And that's one of the problems. The problem is that people today won't sit for that period of time. And we were having fun. It's not like it was drudgery. We sat in our circle and we had pop songs. It turned out that the teams on the other side love ZZ Top. So we would play ZZ Top, we would play other rock, other pop stars, and just have a really good time that raises our vibration. So for 7 years, we did that, and we enjoyed being with each other. We had camaraderie, we had a love for each other, and so it was an enjoyable experience. People go to church every Sunday, and I wouldn't think twice about their whole life going to church every Sunday and spending an hour and a half in church. And if they just would do this, if they would just form a circle and sit in the circle and sing and raise their vibration, the teams on the other side honor that. They want to help. They want to see things happen. And so if somebody's willing to sit for that period of time, they will make something happen in that group, in that circle.
And in your circle, was one of you like a medium and you knew they were a medium? Or was it that you were hoping that some kind of talent would emerge from one of you to start doing physical stuff?
That's what it was. This was an experimental circle. When I say it's experimental on our side, but also experimental on their side of the other side. There were teams on the other side who were willing to work with us to see if we could just form a circle out here in the middle of the cornfields in Illinois. If we could just form a circle and see what would happen, if they could develop the talent that was in that circle, and it was magnificently successful. We have one developing physical medium. We have three originally trance mediums, people going into trance and people would speak through them. And then we're joined by a fourth trance medium who is very talented. But they developed, they were the ones on the other side because we were dedicated to it and we were willing to spend the time and willing to raise our vibrations with each other, that they on the other side honored that and they helped us to develop these people. So that's the reason I say if any circle would just sit and be willing to sit for 7 years or 5 years or whatever it would take for it to happen, we would see many more of these phenomena. It's just that people are not willing today to sit like they were in the 19th century when they had nothing else to do. except to win, play parlor games or sit and have a circle. And so we don't have that opportunity today. And that's the reason we don't have more of it.
We've been talking about the book, Evidence Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, You Will Never Die. But you've got other books out, haven't you? Can you tell us about your other books?
Well, the other books are dedicated to various topics. I have one book that's dedicated to the fact that there is nothing but mind and experience. It's what the nature of reality is. Underlying this reality is our universal intelligence. It is all intelligence. It is all consciousness. And so that book is dedicated to showing why we know that's true. I have another book called Your Eternal Self, Science Discovers the Afterlife, and it is the scientific information that shows us that the afterlife is real, because the mind is not in the brain. Our minds are not in our brain. And this book demonstrates that and then shows why that shows that proves that we live on after the body dies. We don't need the body to have a mind. And so our mind is completely separate. And Answers to Life's Enduring Questions and Reasons for What Happens in Your Life are books that have answers to questions that people have about this life, about the life after this life. You know, if you have two spouses, who do you live with in the next life? And what happens to aborted or stillborn or miscarried children? You know, do they go into the next life? All of these questions that people ask are in those two books. And so I recommend those to anybody who would wanted to know more about the life after this life and the nature of this life.
We talked about seekreality.com earlier. Do you have plans for another book? And what's happening with Seek Reality?
Yeah, my focus now is on seekreality.com. And the reason for that is because it's going to get out to more people. And we want people to understand these truths. If humankind understood these truths, we would live together in love, peace, and joy. It would make a change in the whole earth. There is a gospel of Thomas that's in one of the Nag Hammadi library Gnostic Gospels, and in which Jesus is reported to have said that the kingdom of heaven is spread out upon the face of the earth, and men do not see it. And what he was saying was that the kingdom of heaven is here now. We just have to enter it. If we could just change our minds, have what was called in the Greek a metanoia, which means a change of heart and mind. And so if we can have this change of heart and mind, we will live in a heaven on earth. We certainly can live in our own heaven on earth among all of our loved ones, our family. And hopefully then in the future, when everybody knows these truths, all of humankind will live in this heaven on earth that Jesus said is all around us. We just don't see it.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, wonderful. I've enjoyed it.
And that was an interview with Dr. R. Craig Hogan about his book, Evidence Beyond a Reasonable Doubt You'll Never Die. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And the Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. And I've also added a new tier to the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign, where for $12.50 a month, you can get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as the Past Lives Podcast extended episodes. And including the Alien UFO Podcast episodes, there are now more than 100 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the links are in the show notes. And look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. If you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And there has been testing done recently in the last few years, a couple of decades. Was it Dr. Julie Bleichel and others? And they've done really rigorous testing.
Julie Bleichel, yes, from the Winbridge Institute. And they've done rigorous testing. And they're primarily, though, in mental mediumship. And the reason, the difference between mental and physical mediumship is in mental mediumship.